Welcome to the Sunday Night There Is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. I would like now to introduce Terry W. She has at least 6 months of abstinence. She has recovered through the directions in the Big Book and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After she shares, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what she has shared. So please help me welcome Terry, a compulsive overeater from Boston, Massachusetts. Welcome, Terry.
Thank you very much, Pat. Thank you, everyone. And I just want to thank a lot of my friends are here and just thank you so much for your support. It means the world. So I would like to start off before I tell you a little bit about myself with a prayer. This is called a set aside prayer, and a lot of people can change their words around, but this is what mine is. Dear God, please help me set aside everything I think I know about myself, my brokenness, my spiritual path, and you, for an open mind and a new experience with myself, my brokenness, and especially you, dear Lord God. Amen. So I think I'll start by telling you, I've been in OA for 30 years, and 26 of those I've been abstinent. And that means I have not eaten flour or sugar. Those are my trigger foods, but I've been recovered for two. And a lot of people ask, you know, what's the difference between being abstinent and recovered? So being recovered through I've gone through the 12 steps of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've had a spiritual awakening, and the thought of food has been lifted from me. And I live my life daily in through the steps, and particularly in step 11, 10, 11, and 12. So I think I'll talk about first of where I was and where I am today and how that I got here. I come from the gates of hell is it really all I can just say. And I pray no one ever has to go through the things that I've gone through. And for those of you who do, it's there's such a solution here. It's just a miracle. So, as a little child, I think I was born with this. As a little girl, I ate. At 3 years old, I climbed up and ate a bottle of baby aspirin. And I think a year later, I climbed up, and I can specifically remember the location of where these were when I was like 3 and 4, and I ate a whole bottle of vitamins. And I used to just love to have things in my mouth. And one particular thing is I had these rubber toys, and a lot of you are very too young to remember, but we had Gumby and Pokies, which were like a horse and like a big little stick figure. And I can remember I hid and I ate the plastic off the 12-inch Gumby. And I could specifically remember sitting in that little teeny closet trying to swallow that plastic. And, you know, at the time, I didn't think there was anything wrong with that. You know, everybody eats plastic, right? But, you know, even growing up for lunches, my grandmother raised me, just to plug that. But we had sugar sandwiches, which was the white bread, tons of butter, and we would pour sugar on top. And those were our lunches. So those were like the greatest, you know. And what I found interesting is my mother used to do shoppings on Monday nights. And my sister, my mother, and I would eat the entire house that one night. And then the rest of the week, we'd have nothing. It was just like shove, shove, shove these things in my mouth. I can remember I had, my brother used to get a dozen of those round things with coffee on Sunday mornings, and I would eat 11 of them out of the dozen, and I would get punished because I ate 11 of them. But to me, that I just loved, as I said, having those things in my mouth. As for my family life, my dad unfortunately was in prison when I was 3, and he died when I was 9, so I really didn't know him very well. My mother absolutely hated me. She told me I was stupid constantly. You know, don't apply to college. No one's ever going to take you, Terry. Don't get your degree before me. And my little sister, like, be crying all the time, and she just shut the door on her. And so, you know, as a very young, I guess before I was a teenager, I had to start raising my little sister because my mother just was not available. You know, and as I got a little older as a teenager, I ate massive amounts of food. I remember babysitting and I would be like doing these contests, like how much can I eat without gaining weight? And I would like weigh myself the next day and I wouldn't gain a pound and I would eat so much. As a teenager, you know, I didn't gain a pound. I was a gymnast and on the gymnastic team, and I worked out 5-6 days and nights a week because I lived across from the high school where the gymnasium was. So, you know, the weight never came on. And then when I got a little older in my 20s, I was a professional bodybuilder. And I did that for 6 years, 6 nights, 6 days a week. And, you know, back then I started controlling what I was eating because as a bodybuilder, you have to eat certain amounts of food, particular kinds to make your muscles grow. So at that point I was starting controlling a little bit what I was eating. And so I got into program, I got into OA, and, you know, the problem was I knew I had an eating disorder and I couldn't get it into treatment programs, you know, because I didn't have insurance. And as I'll tell you in a little bit why, but I was thinking the other day, you know, I did finally get into a treatment center and I was there 10 minutes. Do you know why? Because my potassium was so low, they had to rush me to the hospital. So because I was going to have a heart attack. So I was even too sick to be into a treatment center. So, you know, these are the memories that I have, but, you know, when I think about where I come from, I came from severe anorexia and severe bulimia. So the anorexia started, I'll talk about that a little bit first, because you don't hear a lot about the anorexia. And there's so many behaviors that people that we do as anorexics that, you know, other people probably never would think we're very crazy. But for us, it's just like, this is what we did. I think I started my anorexia around the time my grandmother passed away. And my car broke down at the same time. So I just stopped walking to work and back. And I would just cry constantly on the way to work, cry on the way back to work. And it became so obsessive that I would had to walk no matter what. Rain, snow, sleet, whatever it was, I had to walk. And that hour walk turned into 4 miles. And then that turned into 5 miles. So I had to walk 5 miles a day, no matter what. And if I did walk 5 miles, I was allowed to eat a piece of candy. That was what I allowed myself. I would put food in my mouth and chew it, but I wouldn't swallow it. You know, even at work, I'd pretend I was eating lunch and I would spit it into a napkin and then just like hide the napkin and then throw it away. I just wouldn't swallow the food. Then at one point I would allow myself 6 raisins. That was a big, you know, a lot of nutrition there. But for a year, I actually drank tea and chewed gum. And the doctors I went to said, they don't know how I'm alive. They just have no idea how I survived that. I used to weigh myself 5-6 times a day. And if I weighed over 82 pounds, I wouldn't leave the house because that's just unacceptable to me at that time. And, you know, my friends, this is so sad. And I think about it a lot. You know, I had so many great friends and they would come over and knock on the door and I wouldn't let them in. And I took like this cardboard and I taped it all over my windows and my doors so no one could look in. And they'd be knocking on the door and I wouldn't answer it. And then they'd call me. I wouldn't answer the phone. I was just isolated. All I cared about was the food. Everybody else was just in my way. So, you know, my friends, I've made amends to some of them, but a lot of them I've lost, you know, and that's so unfortunate. And I really regret that. One thing I like to talk about is stealing. A lot of anorexics steal. And I used to steal clothes and I used to steal pocketbooks. And then I started stealing those large cordless phones, which you don't have your people don't even know what they are. But back in the olden days, they had these phones. You had to like had a little cord and stuff. And I stole like 7 of those and they were like big. And I got caught. And I went to jail for the day. They put me in a cell and I had to go to court over that. So what I did was, being as smart as I am, I did research and research and research. And I found documentation that proved that anorexics electrolytes are so off when they're that thin that they don't think straight. So a lot of times you'll hear anorexics saying, you know, I didn't know what I was doing. I couldn't think straight. And it's true, your whole body changes and your electrolytes changes. And I remember I had a woman who lived upstairs from me, who was like my second mother. And when she passed away, I was supposed to be watching her cat for her, you know, for the family. And, you know, I stole her jewelry so I could sell that for food. And I thought God told me to steal that, and that was okay. I could never, ever even fathom thinking about doing that today. I mean, that was, to me, was like, you know, God told me to do this. I need to get food. I don't have any money. And you know, and it's sad to think that I did that. But, you know, I wasn't acting like myself. So I got arrested, and I told them about the electrolyte. And then she says, well, you know, I can see you're anorexic, and I got off. Thank you, God. But, you know, I really believe, you know, the anorexia, my eyes were like, my eyes are blue today, and they used to be jet black. I would just walk around like I was dead. I had no emotion. I couldn't, I mean, I could cry. That was the only thing I could do, but I couldn't feel anything. I just could not feel anything. And fast forward to the bulimia, you know, I started getting well. And then my girlfriend, she threw up. And she's like, come on, Terry, I want you to learn to throw up. And I'm like, I'm not going to throw up. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. And she's like, no, 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 we have to go throw up right now. So it took me like a month, but I learned to throw up. And I learned to throw up so good that I didn't have to put my finger down my throat. I could just develop those muscles where they're supposed to be in my stomach and just throw up. But, you know, you hear about the mental twist. And this here is when I thought about food 13 hours a day. And I'm not kidding you. I would wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I would call a couple bakeries, and I would have them triple dip those things that I wanted. I would spend the rest of the day shopping because I ate $130, $150 worth of food a day. And then I would spend the whole day just planning it. You know, where am I going to buy this? What if they don't have that frosting? What if they don't have this? Oh my. So I would spend the whole day around shopping. And, you know, right before, like at 4 o'clock, I would set everything up in my kitchen perfectly because of my obsessive compulsive behavior. My entire kitchen had food all laid out all over it. And at 4:30, bingo, I just ate and threw up till 3 a.m. But I do want to note, like around 12 o'clock, I would be finished. So I thought, and I'd put it in the garbage, and I'd spray Windex and Clorox all over it. And I live next to a restaurant, so I'd go outside and put it in the dumpster because, you know, I wouldn't eat it. Well, you know what? I went right back out there, took it out of the garbage every single night and ate it with the Windex on it, the Clorox, the bleach. I didn't care. I was so obsessed. I just had to eat and throw up. And one thing I did was I bought a part of my menu, I guess you'd call it, was I bought a sheet cake every night. Like a graduation size sheet cake. And I had them write happy birthday, Terry, on it every day of the week. So I would have to go to all these different stores because I didn't want them to know that it wasn't my birthday. But, you know, that was just part of what I ate, and the amounts of food were just amazing. So I think about, you know, like the amends I've made to bakeries to actually go in has been pretty substantial because of things that I have stolen, the way I acted. Also with the bulimia, I would have to have 3 gallons of ice cream a night. I lied and manipulated people like crazy. I'd go into this ice cream store and I'd have like a pad of paper and I'd be like this. Oh, Sarah wants this. Okay. And and Joni wants this. And I'd give them a list of 6 different sundaes and they were all for me, you know? And it was really sad. But what this came down to and what really scared me was the food controlled my life. I didn't control the food anymore. It wasn't my choice to eat. It controlled my life. I could not stop no matter how hard I tried. I prayed. I mean, I couldn't stop. And I remember at one point my mother called me up and she said, I'm coming over to go for a walk with you. And I would only see you if you're going to walk with me because I walked 5 miles a day. So if you weren't going to walk with me, I wasn't even going to talk to you. So I said, okay, we can go for a walk. She came over and there was like 8 to 10 people in my kitchen, all my friends, some of my relatives, my neighbors were all standing in my kitchen. It was an intervention saying they're going to take me to the hospital. And I just freaked out. I said, you know, I promise I'll gain 10 pounds. You know, I'll go to treatment, whatever it is, I'll take care of myself. And I got out of going for that particular intervention. But as I said, you know, my life was so horrible. Like I lost my job. I got fired from my job because he said that if I fell down the stairs, they didn't have enough money to take care of me. I couldn't pay my rent. They shut off my hot water and my gas was about to be shut off. So I couldn't take a shower because there was no hot water or anything like that. As I said, I wouldn't talk to anybody. My car got repossessed. And I dumped everybody that was my friend. No matter who it was, I just dumped them. So I tried to get into treatment centers all over the world. And then I got into that one I just talked to you about. Too sick to get in there. So I had nowhere to go. And how many?
Sorry, 15.
Thanks. So I had nowhere to go. So my sister said to me, well, you know, well, can I take you to OA? And I'm like, what's OA? She said, it's for, you know, people like you. And I said, okay, sure, I'll go. And I went to an OA meeting and there was so many people there. And I'm like, these people are skinny. They're nothing like me. Like I was just turned off. And you know what? I kept going to these OA meetings and I would cry every single time and leave, cry and leave. And you know what, at one of the meetings, I recognized this woman that I knew because I mean, I had to be home by 4:30. Don't forget to throw up and binge. I couldn't be anywhere after 4:30. So, I did recognize a woman and I remember handing her a post-it and on it, I wrote, I can't breathe. I'm having a panic attack. I mean, I was so sick and just so, I was awful. So anyway, I got into OA, this girl grabbed my hand and she says, you're going to do what I tell you to do. And I was so broken, so desperate that, there was nowhere else for me to turn. And I was just willing to say, you know, whatever she did. And she was a tough sponsor back then. They used to get these rules where, you know, I had a class on a Tuesday night, and she wouldn't let me take it because it was a meeting night. No restaurants, no boyfriends, no traveling. But you know what? When I was first newly abstinent, you know, I'm different than all of you, right? So I said, I can travel. So I moved to Belgium. I went to school over there. I got one of my degrees over there and lived there for a year and a half. And, you know, I took all this huge, my books with me, my literature, phone numbers, meetings. So I was all set because, you know, I'm in program. This is what I do now. Well, the first person I called didn't speak English. It was all in French. So all those phone numbers were in French and Flemish, and I didn't speak either. So, and all the meetings were also in French. So I was kind of lost. But what I did figure out within a few more weeks is where all the vending machines and the bakeries were. You know, my first words were, how much is that third chocolate on the left? What's in it? This was the language that I learned, you know, and I would walk for miles. I just started binging again. It was horrible. Just binging. And, you know, I did end up traveling to different countries so that I would just eat my weight and measured foods. You know, I went to Germany twice and I brought weight and measured foods with me. I went to Austria. So I used to travel just to say, like, I could stay abstinent at that time. So, you know, I always try to figure out, why am I eating? Okay, well, obviously, I can tell you why. Because my mother hated me. My father was in jail. Both of my grandfathers molested me when I was a child. I'm stupid and I'm ugly, right? So this is why I have an eating disorder. Why else would I have this, you know? And another thing, like, I didn't understand was, like, people that were heavy, why didn't they just stop eating? And the people that were thin like me, why didn't we just eat? So I have a friend who's 600, my husband's friend's 600 pounds. I'm like, what is wrong with him? Why doesn't he just stop eating? You know, how could he can't walk, he can't breathe. But you know why? Because we have human emotions. And what we do, well, at least what I do, is when I grab food, and what that does is it gives me an effect. So I eat for an effect. Even when I was a little girl, as I told you, those aspirins gave me a big effect. I was like, oh, these are so good. So I eat for an effect. I mean, I could have fear, guilt, shame, regret, jealousy, and I would still eat no matter what, whether it's happy or sad. So we're human beings, we build emotions, and we eat for an effect. And unfortunately, that effect lasts like 7 to 9 seconds. So I always thought food was the problem, but food is not the problem at all. The problem is that I have an allergy and a mental obsession. So as it says in the big book, Dr. Silkworth talks about, in the doctor's opinion, I have an allergy and a mental twist, a mental obsession. And, you know, it's like, I think about it as, you know, my friends will put a cupcake in their mouth and the light bulb will go on and then it will go off and they go about their day. You know, for me, I'll put something in my mouth and the light bulb goes on. It does not shut off for hours and hours and hours. It's like food, 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 food. I'm wired differently than other people. You know, I'm different. And I have these foods, I can't put them to my mouth because I will act very differently than other people that don't have an allergy to food. So, you know, when I talk about what's the problem is I have no power. I'm powerless over food and my life has become unmanageable. That's step one. You know, and I think a lot of people, well, also what's the solution is to find a power greater than myself, which to me is a God, my God. And I just follow the instructions in the big book and the 12 steps, and that's how I get there. The big book is in a book of instructions. It's a textbook of instructions, and each one follows along the other. And, you know, I just want to go back to step one for a minute, because step one is I'm powerless over food. My life is unmanageable. There's two parts to that, right? And a lot of people don't talk about or think about my life as unmanageable. Well, my life was so unmanageable. I mean, I was going to be living in the street. And I also wanted to point out in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous on page 52, they talk about the bedevilments. And it says, we had to ask ourselves, why should we apply our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view? Okay, so here's the bedevilments. We're having trouble with personal relationships. Check. We couldn't control our emotional natures. True. We were prey to misery and depression. Absolutely. We couldn't make a living. Absolutely not. We had a feeling of uselessness. I felt so stupid and dumb. Oh, yeah. And we were full of fear. I was full of fear. And I was happy. And I couldn't seem to be any help to any other person. That's so true. So, I mean, I lived in these bedevilments until I got into program, you know, and I had to, my ego used to be like up here. And what I had to do is I had to smash my ego. And, you know, when I was starting to study the big book, the doctor's opinion saved my life. I mean, first of all, I never understood that I had an allergy and a mental obsession. Like that took 600 pounds off my shoulders. I'm like, me, I'm not stupid. I'm not ugly. I'm not dumb. It's not my fault. That was the biggest relief I've ever had in my life. I couldn't believe it's not my fault. I'm not stupid. The second thing that Dr. Payne talks about is, you know, finding a power greater than yourself to restore your sanity. It doesn't have to be God. It can be anything that is bigger than you. And that says that right in the big book, because a lot of people have a trouble with finding their own God or the conception of. It doesn't have to be God. It can be anything bigger than you. There's another $500 ticket right there that happened to me. So that's where I you know, my basics started off, knowing that, you know, it's not my fault. And then from there, I started studying the other steps. And, you know, today it's my life is like second to none. I was always told to get, you know, like a group of people together, like to be in the center of the herd. And I was afraid to call people. I really was. And, but you know what? I crushed my ego and I just did what I was told. So, you know, I remember I had a sponsee once and she said to me, oh, Terry, you just pray in the morning and take a call. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. the thing, so what I do is I get up in the morning and I pray. I take sponsee calls. I weigh and measure my food. I call 3 people a day. I go to 8 meetings a week. That's just me. I don't require that for my sponsees, but I personally do. I do service. I'm in a chair of one of the meetings. I'm a newcomer greeter for another meeting. I do as much service as possible because I don't want anybody else to live the way I had to live. And, you know, this program is just like, just if you're new, just let go and let God, just trust that you're going to be okay. And just, I learned to just shut my mouth and listen, because all I used to do was I used to be right about everything. My world revolved around Terry. Everything revolved around Terry. And today, do you know what? I don't think about myself all day anymore. I think about other people. And I really feel that God put me on this earth so that I could help other people. You know, the things I've gone through, I mean, if I can help one person, what a gift from God that is. You know, and I co-create with my God all day. You know, I see a connection to God, which is higher power. It's like kind of like a vein or like a pipe. It's like if I have fear or resentments or anything like that, that blocks that channel from me to my God.
25 minutes.
Thanks. So what I do is I have to make amends. I have to do 10 steps to get rid of the fear and the resentments so that I can live a life of happiness, you know. And today I'm like rocketing into the fourth dimension, as it talks about in the big book. I mean, I couldn't be happier. And yeah, I weigh my food all day. Yes, I'm different. But you know what? What a gift from God. What a gift from God. So please do not give up on this program, because it's a miracle. And I would be dead without it. I would truly be dead. And I just wanted, before we close, talk about real quickly. I have no teeth on the top right of my mouth at all. And I have no teeth on my bottom left at all from binging and purging and throwing up for 13 hours a day for so many years. I lost my period when I was anorexic. So if I wanted kids, I couldn't have them, right? I couldn't digest my food. Like, I couldn't eat lettuce. I would almost went to the hospital once because I ate a salad and I couldn't digest it. But, you know, the miracle I'll never forget is the first day I ever ate food was on a Christmas morning, and I had 2 eggs, a banana, and wheat germ. And it took me an hour to eat that. Absolutely horrified and petrified to eat food. But you know what? I trusted and I relied on God. I let go and I just trusted my sponsees, my people in this program. And, you know, thank you, God, I'm here today. So thank you for letting me share. And again, thank you for those people that came to join me. It means a lot. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Terry.